Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Robert Forto hosting The Gypsy Musher with Hugh Neff. We're at his home away from home here in Meadow Lakes, Alaska at our good friend's house, Dave Shear. Hugh, how's it going?
Good. Got down here 2 days ago. Did a talk in Willow yesterday and just packing all day today, getting all my gear ready and all the different stuff we need for the school tour. And I'll be flying out of here tonight at 11 with my boy George heading for Chicago.
So this is your annual spring school tour. You do it every year. Tell us about it. Maybe tell our new listeners what that is all about. Where are you heading?
Chicken in a car. Car can't go. Chicago.
Okay.
Name that movie.
I have no idea. Blues Brothers.
No, River Runs Through It.
Okay.
Brad Pitt. Basically, we get to Chicago. I'm going to be going up to my buddy. The blessing of being me is I'm still best friends with all of my friends since we were 5 years old. And they all happen to live up in my second favorite city in America. It's called Milwaukee. And so I'm going to go up there with George. My buddy Mike has a nice yard up there. We'll hang out for the day. He's a fellow Eagle Scout. We're all Boy Scouts together. And then from there, I'll be coming back and doing my first talk is going to be at St. Athanasius, which is my alma mater in Evanston, Illinois. Excited about that. I've got our friends from WGN-TV in Chicago are going to come and follow a little bit of my presentation, so that should be pretty cool. Hopefully, we'll be able to share it with you all. And then the driving begins, so I'll be driving from there. First of all, thanks, Pat Moon, for picking me up at the airport. Once I get my rental, I'll be driving to New York, starting Hamburg, the Buffalo area. Got 4 or 5 talks in that area. People don't realize how many people in New York follow dog mushing. I mean, every year I'm doing just lots of engagements in that area. Then I'll be visiting my sister, Teresa, who's actually one of the head people at the school district in New Haven, Connecticut. So I get a chance to stop and say hi to her. And I'll be doing talks from there in College Park, Maryland, Virginia Beach, Virginia, some small town up in the mountains in Virginia. I can't remember the name of it.
Roanoke?
No, it's a small little town.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it. Look at that beautiful swan out there.
That's awesome.
Anyhow, I do these tours every year, and I never really know where I'm going to end up going. I have a lot of the same schools I go to, but every year there's at least 6 new schools. So I'm always excited about getting out in the country, out in the backwoods, and checking out the South especially. Hopefully I'm going to have enough time to stop in and visit my buddy real quick in Nashville, Hobo Jim, before I head back up to Chicago and do some talks the third week of May. And from there, I'm jumping on a plane, flying down to Houston. Right now, we're tentatively have a speaking engagement in Austin I'll be doing, and then Houston. So it's going to be a busy month. I'm going to be exhausted. I already am exhausted just talking about it.
And this started a couple of days ago. You had mentioned that you talked to some folks up in the Fairbanks area, right, and then down here in Willow. A lot of these folks, especially in Alaska, have these talks that, you know, where the mushers come in. How is yours different than everybody else's?
I think every Iditarod musher would agree that I just talk more. And that's why I drive a lot of them crazy. But I just have a lot of passion for what I do. Probably a little bit too much coffee. And combine those together and you get a guy who likes to talk about his love of dogs. Just dogs, but dreams, too. I'm really trying to use my story, the roller coaster it's been, to get these kids motivated to get out there and find a dream. Because the worst thing in life is to see kids that just are sort of like, I don't care. I'm going to go, you know, turn on my video game and sit on the couch. I think kids nowadays have it much tougher than we did growing up. Because back when we were kids, our parents wouldn't allow it. My dad had me working. If I was laying around in the house, he'd be like, what are you doing in here? Go do something. So I think I feel sorry for these kids in a way that they don't have more motivated people getting them on the ball to get out there and stay busy and figure out what they want to do in their lives.
You know, speaking of motivated and passion, we're sitting here at Dave's house. He is an Iditarod and UConn Quest veteran from back in the day. And we are well over a month past Iditarod,
yeah.
And he still has Iditarod newspapers on his kitchen table.
Yeah, yeah.
What does that say about Dave?
Dave's always, you know, been not only a great friend, but always trying to help me to become better. He knows.
Yeah.
I think everybody knows the sadness of the Hugh Neff saga is I never really came close to reaching my potential. And I've won a couple of races and all that, but it's been, you know, I don't think people say, oh, you look like you're having fun all the time. But when the races are over and you realize where you messed up in races, we could have done better. Even though I don't even know if I can talk about Iditarod right now, but I can talk about just in a plain sense all of dog mushing races. Every race, I think most mushers think, man, I could have done it a lot better than I did this year. And you see that even with the front runners, a guy, you know, whether it's Brent Sass or Alan Moore or Susan Butcher back in the day used to talk about how she would write lists at the finish line about how she could do it better next year. And I think that's the beauty of mushing, and why a lot of us don't get fried out from it is because we're always realizing that we can do it better if we ever pay more attention to what we're doing wrong.
So Dave is a little bit more of your analytical side then?
Yeah, and he showed me in races this year my run-rest schedule is what got me in the butt, and obviously I knew it by the time I was early in the race and known that I pushed it too hard. So with dogs, even though they might sound beautiful and be really energetic, sometimes as a musher, no matter what, you got to look at your watch and go, the hook's staying in the ground. The dogs are going to keep sleeping on the straw. It's time for you to give them a break. Let that energy manifest itself later on in the race. Don't worry about pushing it up now.
Did we have a show after I did ride? I don't think so.
Maybe a short one, possibly. I can't remember. I think I might have been in a native village.
So give us a quick recap. How do you think it went overall? For your fans, where did you finish? How did you think you did? You know, give us a quick recap of this year's race.
I really can't talk about it, to tell you the truth. I don't know if it's possible yet, to tell you the truth. So I'll just let it go. We'll get to that later on this summer. But I don't know what the rules are. I don't want to get in trouble with anybody and, you know, all that. So let's just stick to talking about dogs. And we can talk about the Quest if you want.
Of course.
That was a fun one.
You guys are allowed to talk about the Quest. So that's really interesting to see the compare and contrast of the two. So let's move on and talk a little bit about the dogs. I know George is going with you this year.
Yeah.
Is this his first year?
Yeah, Costanza's a rookie.
Okay.
People are used to Walter, and everybody's like, oh, where's Walter? But people got to realize Walter's getting up there. He's losing his hearing. He's 11 years old now. And it's probably losing his hearing because he's been listening to me too much.
Yeah.
Lord knows, I wonder if I'm losing my hearing sometimes just from hearing all the dog barking throughout the years. But George is a ham. He's going to be great with the kids. This guy has been talking to school in Fairbanks, and he goes, oh, George Costanza. Have you ever seen the episode Year of Costanza? It's all about, I guess, one year where George Costanza on the Seinfeld episode, everything he did went well, and he was happy all the time. So
okay.
This is the year of George is the way I'm looking at it.
He's doing well, isn't he?
Yeah. Two-time Quest Champion Lead dog. A real mellow dog, but just a beautiful gait. His parents, mother's Annie, Walter's sister. Father's Brady, who is the son of Larry, Lance Mackey's famous dog. So just a really neat dog.
You said he was 9?
He's going to be 8.5. He's done 10,000 milers. He's, from what I can recollect, I might have to double think this, but I'm pretty sure he's finished every single race he's ever been in. He's a pretty amazing dog.
And he's one of the few dogs that you've had that has raced over in Europe too, right?
Yeah. He is the only dog that has done the Finnmark Slopet, the Quest, and the Iditarod besides his sister, Jewel. So pretty amazing dogs. Now that the Norwegians are coming over and doing more races over here, they I'm sure there's some of them that have done all three, probably maybe Torsten, or perhaps Mats Pedersen, but some of those guys probably have some dogs that have done all three, but it's not very, no Alaska mushers.
So George and Jules' passports are definitely full for sure, working their way across the world. It's going to get his first taste of the lower 48, which is good.
he actually flew through Chicago, so he's been to Pat.
But he hasn't been on the road.
Yeah, he doesn't know the energy of lower 48,
right,
especially during an election year.
And the traffic.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that. You know, I was thinking about this the other day when I saw your pictures that I believe was when you're up in Willow, and he looked so calm just sitting there. I believe it was on a stage or something.
Yeah.
That's not a typical sled dog trait.
No, and I know there's other mushers that have told people that I've done shows that Hugh Neff doesn't train his dogs right because he treats them too much like a human with too much love and brings them indoors and puts them on couches. And if those mushers want to say that about me,
you have won the quest.
Yeah, and I just, for me, it's quality of life for the dog. I don't use dogs to become some great race champion. I don't want to be one of these people that is using dogs every 3 or 4 years and gets another set of dogs just so they can go around and tell everybody how great they are as a dog person. I think the greatest dog people are the ones that are trying to make sure that dog is having a beautiful life from puppyhood to as they get older in their teens, you know. I think that's what it's really all about.
So speaking of puppies, I saw some pictures very recently up at your place in Tope. You got some new pups on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about those guys. How old are they? Where are they from?
They're going on 2.5, 3 months. There's two different litters. Lester is the father of one litter, and that's, of course, the really loud, crazy litter. You know, Lester is my brown dog that everybody loves. The mother is Bonnie, and she's a little bit of a spazoid, too, so they'll be fun to play with. And then the other litter is out of Calypso, who is Lester's sister, and a dog named Seymour, who's a little bit more mellow, sort of like Spencer. Looks just like Spencer, actually, your dog.
Okay.
So anyhow, beautiful pups. That's what I do most of the time in the summer, besides doing my talks at the Golden Bear. Every night is playing with puppies. I've got my main team I keep in the yard, and then all my yearlings and a few of the retired dogs are down in Skagway doing tourism with my buddy John for the summer, which I think is great training for younger dogs or for older dogs that aren't getting run as much in the winter. I think people always want to say, oh, the dogs are getting old, they don't need to run anymore, and that's like telling a dog not to do what they're bred to do to me. So even if they're, you know, 12 years old or 13, I don't think that's too terribly old to run them. Just don't run them that far. Run for 10 minutes.
And the tours, they're relatively short. It's a very quick, you know, maybe a half a mile, or I have no idea. But it's all the cruise traffic is on there.
And the reason I don't do it anymore personally, and I did it for many years, is first of all, I get nervous around humans. I can handle talking to humans for an hour or so, but then I need to have my myself with the dogs.
Right.
But for me, the toughest part on the dogs is the monotony, is the boredom. They get a little bored doing the same thing all the time. That's why dogs like to check out different trails and stuff. But John's a great kid. He's been doing this for me for the last couple of years, and he's also raced. I raced with him in the Cusco this year, and I know he's good with the dogs, so I have total confidence that they're being trained well and are going to have a good time.
So those dogs stay down there till late August, early September?
Till September, and then I bring them back, and, you know, the way dog mushing is anymore, if you're not running them nearly, you know, 3, 4, 5 days a week, you're falling behind on the schedule because it's what they need.
It is. Yeah, I was reading that Mitch Seavey starts his training plan in middle July.
Yeah.
And he's a little bit different type of training than you do, at least down there.
Yeah, yeah, those guys, his dogs are very, it's like looking at a military outfit.
Right.
It's just, I mean, you're in awe, to tell you the truth. I mean, I was parked next to him in, Iditarod or Cripple this year, and I always get those two confused. And his whole team just laid down, and they're laying down sideways, and they all just laid down at the same time and looked back at him, and it was just phenomenal to watch. So there's a reason those folks are going to be dominating the last great race for a long time to come, I think. I just think, you know, they're fortunate to have the lines of dogs they have, and obviously a very well-groomed family with lots of income and...
Well-groomed family.
Well, look at them, man. They're like the, you know, I don't know how to describe them, but they're taking the whole mushing scene by storm, I'd say.
Right. So when you get back from the school tour, I guess that's towards the end of May, and the reason you do that, obviously, is the kids are still in school. So you can hit up all those schools before they get out for summer vacation. And you had mentioned coming back and doing the nightly talks at the hotels in Tok and the kennel tours. And I've seen on your messages a lot of people are already asking to come and stop by at these places. How in the world do you schedule those out for August 20th when it's only the end of April right now?
I say, well, I might be there and I might not.
Right.
It all depends on the weather. If
right.
it's raining out, I'll probably be on the trail. But if it's sunny out, which has been, you know, this has been what wasn't talked about enough this year, like in past years, it's been different weather-wise. I mean, we didn't see 40 below in Tok this year, which is, when did that ever happen?
We didn't see any snow hardly in Willow at all.
Yeah, so it's just what it is. I mean, I think the whole mushing scene, we all have to start taking a big, like Jeff King once told me, you always got to take a look at the big picture when you're looking at mushing. And we all should think, you know, it's good to support the races we have now, but we should also be thinking that with snow conditions, we should start looking at other parts of Alaska where there are inhabitants, where it might be cool to start some new mid-distance races, 3, 4, maybe even 500-mile races. And I have talked to a lot of villagers, whether it's in Galena, Ruby, the Huntingtons, the Billy Honey, the Byfelts up in Hooslea, and they're all way into it. It's just going to take some people that are willing to help organize this. And I've done before in Tok, and it was great for 1 year, but we really haven't had good snow to do it since that year. But up there a little bit farther north, I think it'd be a great idea. Or even, you know, something out of Manly, Tanana, somewhere in there. But the way the weather is, I just feel, you know, it's you live down here. It's tough.
Well, you know, you were up there in that area just a couple of weeks ago, and you did some short sprint-type races.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Nicole and I went up there, and the older I get, I think the smaller my team's become by choice. So I'm digging the 6 or 8 dogs at a time. Most people wouldn't understand that, but for me, you slow down, you know, you actually enjoy the scene more. Everything's – you get more time to check it out, and you're not in such a rush, and you're not as worried about, you know, having dogs get injured because of – speed, going downhill, stuff like that. I think it's better training for younger dogs, too.
So how was the snow conditions? What was that, late March, early April?
Yeah,
guess.
Phenomenal.
So it's still good.
Snow made the sprint race horrible. I mean, my buddy Jesse Holmes said he probably could have won the Yukon River Championship because it was 1.5 feet of powder snow. Those guys were wallowing in it. They're at least 10 minutes slower than typical years. And that's just for a 16-mile run.
Hmm.
So we went up there, and then we went and visited friends in Minto. And I definitely think a big agenda of mine in the future is going to be to do more with the Native people. I think as far as long-distance mushing goes, there's a big gap between Natives and the mushing scene. And I don't think a lot of Native people even really understand long-distance mushing anymore. Historically, they're all sprint mushers. You know?
Right.
Obviously, there's some Native folks on the coast like John Baker and a lot of the
Mike Williams and...
Yeah, the Inupiaq or the Yupiks that are still mushing. And historically, the Eskimos have been really good mushers. But we were talking the other day, there hasn't been a Native American, Native Athabascan, excuse me, Indian since, I think, Ramey Brooks, maybe, that's done either race. There's been a Gwich'in, my buddy Josh Kadzow, who I actually signed him up for his first year. But it'd be cool to see some more Natives get into it, but it's expensive and it's tough living in the villages.
Yeah, when you got to spend that much money just to get a bag of dog food shipped, if that's the way you feed, you know, it's twice as much as it is here, I would imagine.
Yeah. So my whole deal being a Native wannabe coming from Chicago is, if they're not going to do the long distance, then who knows, man? Maybe you're going to see me
doing the sprint.
I'll be doing the first round. I mean, Lance and Bergwoods did it. I don't see why I can't.
Well, you know, you talked about that's how they used to do them in the past, way back in the distance past. They would, you know, do their typical mail routes or freight or whatever. Then they would race on the weekends in the different villages.
Yeah.
And that's how
it wasn't a business.
It was bragging rights more than anything else.
Yeah.
Maybe they would receive some type of pot, and,
yeah.
you know, but that was how they got their entertainment on the weekends, was running sled dogs.
Yeah, I always said, you know, they say in the history books that the snow machine is why the dog team disappeared from Alaska, and it wasn't that at all. It might have been a little bit, but it really was the television.
Mm.
And that's what has made a lot of people
sedentary.
Exactly. I was trying to come up with that word. But right. It's just a work issue, too. I don't know if people want to do that much work every day.
Right.
But people don't realize that for us mushers, it's not just work. It's like a type of therapeutic yoga we're doing,
right.
Walking around the yard, loosening up our limbs. You see all the toughest men I've ever met in Alaska are all sprint mushers from back in the day, or guys have been mushing forever, guys like Gareth Wright, Lester Earhart, George Atla. Those guys, you know, they lived the life, and that's what kept them young.
And a lot of them must
go Reddington.
They must well into their older age.
Yeah, I mean, Gareth is in his mid-80s. Lester, I just visited him. He looks awesome. I saw some video from, I can't remember the fellow's name. I think he was either from Arctic Village or Venati. And he's 82 years old, and he just did a sprint race.
Wow.
So that's a part of Alaska I would really love to go visit. And a few other spots in Alaska I want to get out by dog team and explore.
Not
for me. I mean, I've done 28,000 milers. I enjoy doing them, but there's more to life than dog racing.
So we had mentioned off air before the show that you're working on some plans about doing some school or community tours in the Yukon. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that would be, it's all tentative right now, but it would be probably next October-ish.
This October, coming up.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Basically, I know Rob Cook and a few people went around to the communities last year, and hopefully somebody like him or somebody else will join me this year. And it's what the quest has been good at, is keeping relations good with the villagers and getting them, not just the people in charge of the race, but getting the mushers to go back to the villages and talk to the people, hang out with them, be their friends. That's what these people are looking for. They just don't want dog races that come through their communities and just blow on through. They want their community to really be a part of the race. And that's why I'm going to go up there and spread the word about what the quest is all about and invite these kids to be a part of it. They can be a volunteer. The kids at the Willow community, where I was talking yesterday, Willow Elementary, right next to where the Iditarod starts, I was telling them, if any of you want to do the junior Iditarod, it's real easy. You got plenty of mushers around here. Start calling them, and one of them is going to say, yes, come on over, let's see what you're made of.
But it ends a mile down the road from there,
yeah,
from the school.
So it's perfect. And these kids, you know, I know a lot of mushers, kids have gone to the school. It was really neat to talk to them because we were talking about bush living and living without running water and, you know, having to have a fire going every night. And I was telling these kids, I hope you all realize how lucky you are to live your lifestyle. A lot of kids up here probably don't realize how the freedom they have in the open spaces that you don't see down in the lower 48 anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. What do you think the difference is when you speak at a school, like even in Willow or Fairbanks, that knows about dog mushing because they see it, they live it, they know people that do it? How do they react to your talks versus somebody that may know about it through their school program but don't know any more than what they learn in class?
Well, I'll give you an example. The last talk I did in Fairbanks was at University Park there by UAF, and those kids were probably the smartest group I've ever seen in my life. They all had cards, which I've seen in other schools, with questions. Their teachers are really whenever I go to any school, and I've done hundreds of schools, I learn a lot about the students just by watching the teachers and how the teachers communicate with the kids. A lot of schooling is really socialization, and if the teacher, I don't care how smart they are they good at getting the kids to want to learn and socialize with each other? So the kids at University Park, they had every section of the quest trail memorized, and they were just asking me questions. The one question I couldn't answer, this kid comes up to the end and goes, why didn't Brent Sass win the race? And I just looked at him and I'm like, sorry, kid.
I can't answer that.
That's, you know, good on Brent, but, you know, Brent has a huge following. He's a good-looking young lad there, and he's got that cheery awesomeness that people like, and he's obviously good for dog mushing. So that's what sort of stinks about dog mushing is that I try to tell kids there's more than one winner, but nobody ever believes that. But anybody who finishes a 1,000-mile race must be doing something right.
So what about the kids in the lower 48? How do they react to this other than already knowing, you know, the basic math? And
They're reading. A little bit more, depends on the age group. You know, a lot of kids want to know about how you go to the bathroom, and they want to know about just, you know, polar bears, or have you ever been attacked by a grizzly during a race? Just goofy questions. But like I said earlier, a lot of it has to do with the teaching. And a lot of these teachers in the lower 48, I've been going to their schools for 10 years now, and those kids are fairly dialed in because the teachers are learning, too, how to prepare better through either the Quest or Iditarod or whatever races, helping to promote education on their websites. So that's a great thing.
And of course, the teachers that are contacting you for the tours, they're your fans or fans of mushing already. So typically, they're not somebody that doesn't have much knowledge of the race already themselves. Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Different types of fans, though. And like somebody told me, you know, fan is short for fanatic.
Right.
And those are the people that can make dog mushing pretty scary, especially on the internet, because a lot of what they're purporting is just in their minds. And I mean, how do they know? They're not on the trail. The fans are the ones who go, look at those beautiful dogs. They're not about the mushers. The saddest part about the races the last couple of years is how often are these races ever talking about positive things that happen during the race? It's always a horrible incident or just, you know.
But, you know that's not.
We need to promote dog talk. Let's say it every year, and the people who run the show, they're not. I still say they're not showing off the dogs enough.
But, you know, that's how it is in any sport. If you watch Sunday Night Football with Al and Chris there on TV, they're talking about all the stories three-quarters of the time, whatever story it is. You know, this person survived cancer, or this person, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes a storyline where the sport becomes secondary in all sports. And I think Iditarod is definitely becoming that way.
We're all,
the Quest or whatever. Hugh or Lance or Allie or whoever is in this particular spot. But did you hear XYZ?
Yes, Gossip Fest.
It's a Gossip Fest. But that, you know, that's how fans enjoy sports now. And I think that Iditarod and I guess the Quest as well are kind of catching up to that that mentality, especially on social media.
You know, every day I try to promote something positive through Facebook. People might think I'm goofy or might get sick of looking at my crap, but I'm doing it for a reason because I think I'm trying to promote good in the world.
Right.
That's what my dad told me to do, so it's what I do. But as a musher, a lot of us, the Alaska mushers are different. They're a breed all their own. But a lot of us mushers from outside, which is pretty much the majority now, we came up here to get away from all that, and now we're seeing it's part of that, and it's the two-edged sword, because a lot of us would love to turn the Facebook off and just live the old Jeremiah Johnson type lifestyle, living off the wilderness and being away from all the politics of everything nowadays, but you can't. We're all part of it, and you couldn't survive this sport not doing the whole internet stuff.
That's interesting you bring that up, because when you and I met in 2009, both of us were just on Facebook, like within a couple of months of each other.
I think you set me up. No, Bill Borden set me up.
Yeah. We were just on a couple of months from each other.
Yeah.
So Facebook was relatively new, and I remember when I met you, and you did a school tour at my kid's school.
Which I was late for.
Which you were late for. I had to
bump and drive. I wasn't driving.
Right. But I remember that was before social media took over.
Yeah.
And it was a different time in mushing.
Yeah.
But how do you think you could react now? How would your life be different if it was at that same point in 2009 as a musher in Iditarod, Yukon Quest, without all of that static?
Well, I wouldn't be who I am, that's for sure. I wouldn't have been able to do all this racing I've been doing. I wouldn't have been able to travel around the world and have so many fans and friends everywhere. So
it's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, exactly. It's the catch-22 of the mushing community. But I'm not going to complain. I've had a magical life. And, you know, the thing about me is I don't waste a year. And I'm not making excuses why I'm not going to race. Sometimes I don't want to race, but you got to do it because, you know, it's what you're bred for.
So let's end on that. I know we always like to reflect and talk about the future. What's the plan for 16-17 season, at least sitting here at the end of April?
Probably doing the usual combo of races. There would be my 29th and 30th 1,000-miler since 2000.
Those are got to be tired by now.
I'm going to be 50 here in a year, so I'm definitely getting travel ready. But I love what I do, and I just I'm blessed being an Alaskan, same like you. And we'll keep the show on the road because we can't stop. We're the Gypsy Musher.
That's right. You are the Gypsy Musher. So we'll end on that. Hugh is heading out on his school tour this evening. There are, I'm sure, some spots available. How do people get in contact with you for that?
Laughing Eyes Kennel at hotmail.com.
You're also on Facebook. Just do a friend request over at Hugh Neff. He also has a Facebook page, Hugh Neff Gypsy Musher, and also a Hugh Neff school tour page too, right?
Yeah, Hugh Neff school presentations.
Hugh Neff school presentations on Facebook. So all of you Facebook fanatics out there, if you're interested in contacting him and you need to get on that schedule, I'm sure he can make arrangements if it's on his path. You heard he's going through New York,
George,
down to Virginia, and on forth. So with that, we'll let everybody go. Hugh, anything to say in closing?
Folks, if you are in the Tok area, please call or send an email before just showing up at my house, especially if you have dogs. I've had so many mushers staying at my place this year that it's I live in a very good spot in Alaska, and people know it, so people are always passing through Tok, and they're like, oh, we'll go stay at Hugh.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah,
so I've done that myself on a time or two, but at least I've always called. But he does have a nice place right off the highway. I'm sure you could find him if you needed to. Otherwise, if you are driving through very quickly, Hugh, where are you at in the summer?
At Golden Bear Hotel, nightly. Usually shows start at 6 and 7 o'clock.
There you go. Hugh Neff, we'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.